huge announcement before we kick off this episode of the DTC series. Wednesday was International Podcast Day, and the 15th Annual Podcast Awards were held, and you made it happen. DNA Today won the Best 2020 Science and Medicine Podcast. We are so thrilled and honored to now be an award-winning podcast. For those that aren't familiar with the Podcast Awards, and you probably are because you've heard me asking for your nominations and votes, the Podcast Awards are the longest-running Podcast Awards event, and it is open to shows throughout the world. This was our fourth year being nominated, and it is so fantastic to share with you listeners that we won. This is a People's Choice Award, which means we won because of each of you that nominated and voted for DNA Today. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for sticking with us the last 8 years. I promise there is so much more to come, and it's just been fantastic to be on this podcasting journey with you. I also wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the DNA Today team. Laura Markham, our marketing director, has had a huge role in managing our team, including Sophia, Corinne, and Mohi. Thank you to each of you. This show would not be possible without your hard work. Picture Genetics is a new and unique DNA testing service. These tests are designed for every stage of life, from family planning and newborn health to personal wellness and disease risk. Unlike other companies, this is actually a clinical-grade test where physicians and genetic counselors are involved in the process. The test sequences entire genes that are medically actionable. It's easy to order and understand with good-looking reports. To order your Picture Genetics, go to picturegenetics.com and use code DNATODAY for 25% off plus free shipping. Get actionable genetic insights today to benefit your family of tomorrow.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. On this show, I explore genetics and how it impacts our health through conversations with leaders in genetics. These are genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, and patient advocates. This episode is part of our ongoing direct consumer genetic testing series, so be sure to check out our previous episodes to learn more about different areas of this and how it affects our lives. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the technology around this genetic testing. Joining me for this discussion is Michael Chenal-Levin, who is the Senior Vice President of Product Research and Development and founding scientist at 10x Genomics. Before joining 10x Genomics, Michael was an NSF postdoctoral fellow with Eric Lander at the Broad Institute, where he worked on developing novel applications of DNA sequencing technologies. Prior to that, Michael worked at Foundation Medicine, where he developed some of the early algorithms to accurately detect mutations in patient tumor samples. Michael earned his PhD in mathematics from MIT with Bonnie Berger, where he was both a Hertz Fellow and an NDSEG Fellow, and his BA in physics from Harvard College. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and I want to start out by learning more about 10x Genomics. What else can you tell us about the company?
Sure. Well, first, excited to be here, and thanks for having me. So 10x Genomics is basically a technology company. We're really focused on building new technologies for biology and you know, really with the ultimate aim of accelerating biology and ultimately leading to the mastery of biology, which is an enormous task that's going to take many, many decades. And so, what we do is we build physical products that consist of, small instruments, chemical reagents, as well as software. And we sell those to basically researchers at a variety of different kinds of institutions. So academic researchers doing, very basic biological discovery, people doing clinical and translational research, very specific to kind of trying to come up with new medicines, new understanding of the mechanisms of disease, and people at, pharmaceutical companies trying to do drug development, things like that.
So you're involved in a lot of different areas, it sounds like.
Yeah, we really cut across a pretty wide range of kind of applications and also different areas of biology and human health. And that's largely because we build, very foundational technologies that kind of have broad application across a lot of different areas of biology.
And some, so from my understanding, you also are in the sequencing area of sequencing DNA and RNA. I wanted to educate our audience a little bit more about how scientists actually sequence DNA and RNA. I mean, there's things they may have heard of, Sanger sequencing, next-gen sequencing. Could you explain a little bit more of how this works?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's been many different generations of technologies of for sequencing. And, you know, basically those technologies have the ultimate aim of taking a biological molecule like DNA or RNA and reading out the patterns of A's, C's, T's, and G's that are present in that. And they've taken different approaches, but in the details, but the kind of high level general approach has been really to take some of the machinery, the molecular machinery that's present in the cell that we all use, you know, within our bodies for copying our own genomes, and actually modify those so that you can basically do that outside of a body in a tube under a microscope and watch the process out as it happens. Widely spread technology now, which is short read sequencing, you know, next generation sequencing. Basically what happens is there's lots of different DNA molecules, and in a very kind of similar way to the way your body would copy its own genome when a cell is dividing, there's the process of a small enzyme that's actually copying all those DNA molecules, but it's doing it in a way that a different color gets kind of a different color of light gets emitted depending on whether the next molecule to get copied is an A base or a C base or a T base or a G base. And you're watching all of that under a microscope, basically, and just doing it at an extremely high throughput so that you can do that very efficiently now.
That's a great explanation of comparing it to how it works in our body. I think that's a good way of thinking about it, of science is trying to kind of copy that so that we can actually see it happening and making note of what those new letters are being added to get that sequence of DNA or RNA. And it's really interesting how far we've come with science of, in the past, always having to have a lot of cells to be able to get this information, but now we're able to get to a point of single cell sequencing. How is this process different? I mean, to me, it still blows my mind that you can take a single cell and start sequencing from it. How is this process different only using that one cell?
Yeah, so I know it's pretty incredible, and it's pretty incredible how just across the board, how far the field has come in the last years, and also just how quickly it's moving forward. Basically the difference is largely in how you, the process that you do up front of what I described with the sequencing. So the actual process of the sequencing is still, essentially the same and unchanged, but up front of that, whereas normally, you know, without prior to single cell sequencing, I might take a million of your blood cells and basically combine from them and read all of it out at the same time, but have no idea what parts came from which cell. Now with single cell sequencing, what you can do is basically isolate individual cells and tag all the molecules that you're going to measure from each of those cells with a basically unique tag that says, this is the cell that I came from. And then you can still go ahead and use a next generation sequencer to do the reading. But now instead of basically jumbling all the information together across a million cells and not knowing which molecule came from which, now you can say, okay, molecule one came from cell one, molecule two came from cell three, et cetera. And you can basically now, for, you know, after you've done the sequencing, know what were the molecules that were in each individual cell to begin with.
So you're able to get individual really profiles instead of kind of one general one with more specific information.
Exactly. Yes.
And how accurate are these results being only from like one cell? If we're comparing it to, you know, older technologies of being able to have lots of cells, and so you're getting a lot of different, sometimes you're going through and it's many different sequences done and then you're compiling that together. But if you're only doing it from one cell, is it only being run once? Is that going to be as accurate?
Right. No, that's a great point. I think, I mean, in general, the actual molecular readout from each individual cell is still quite accurate, although that's something that we really focus on when we build different technologies. But a lot of The other aspect of what you're saying is that you wouldn't normally come to a biological conclusion from the individual readout of one cell. And so that's something that also at 10x we've really focused on, and it's a big part of our technology, is you're doing this, what's called single cell sequencing, but you're doing it across many different cells. You know, it could be hundreds of thousands or even millions or more of cells at any one time. And so frequently you'll also get, you know, some insights by, you know, 100 out of those 100,000 cells. So it's still something rare, but it's a repeated pattern that I see over and over again. And that would give you confidence that what you're seeing is, you know, not kind of some biological random artifact or abnormality, but something that's really kind of meaningful for the underlying biological system that you're looking at.
So it's still important to be able to compile that data to look at it all together, and valuable to look at it separately, but really having that, once it comes together, having that be meaningful for the analysis side. I can think of so many different ways that this is being used, but what areas in genetics are beginning to use this technology? Is there some areas that are using it more than others at this point?
Yeah, so I think, you know, like we talked about in the beginning, I think it's really pretty exciting because it's got extremely broad applicability. But I would say that there are certain areas where it's just even more immediately obvious that it has tremendous value. So one of those is cancer. The reason for that is that it's just inherently extremely heterogeneous. So, you know, the mechanism by which you get a tumor is largely through cells kind of going haywire and turning off the underlying controls that prevent them from changing themselves and mutating. And so when you look across all the different cells that would be present in a tumor, they're actually very different from each other. And those differences matter a lot for, you know, how well is a treatment going to work, how aggressively is that disease going to develop, and all those kinds of questions. And so being able to actually say, I want to look at this kind of tumor at the individual cell level and be able to look at maybe something that's only a small part of that tumor, like 1% of that tumor, but might be the ultimate driver of how you know, dangerous that disease is or how well it's going to respond to therapy is extremely important. So we're seeing a lot of uptake in cancer. But there's also other areas, I think, immunology, both the kind of basic understanding system, but also health applications like autoimmune disease, infectious disease. And again, this comes down to the just basically massive heterogeneity there is in the immune system and massive complexity there is, where even in a kind of healthy person without any disease, just all of your different immune cells are extremely different from each other. There's many different types, and they're all acting in this very complex, concerted effort to, you know, detect foreign invaders, not detect your own body, and kind of maintain this very complex equilibrium.
And so with that, of looking at autoimmune disorders of being a main area that you're talking about, and taking all that information to see if we're able to move closer towards using this information for treatments and all of that. And similar for cancer too, of looking at maybe the progression of a cancer that you're kind of alluding to there, and seeing where someone is at and if a medication is working. If not, I think some people may be thinking, oh, right, to diagnose, but it's much more than that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of what people initially do with a new technology is apply it to really understanding the mechanisms of certain diseases first, and through then the understanding of those mechanisms, coming to both, you know, as you said, diagnostic tools where you could say, okay, we could actually, once we understand certain mechanisms and what they actually mean for the progression of a disease or a treatment, we could have a potentially a diagnostic tool that could utilize that technology. But also, it's extremely useful for people, you know, really tracking diseases over time, understanding the mechanisms, understanding as you do clinical trials where you actually apply certain therapies and see how effective they are, to be able to kind of make kind of repeated measurements at the right and get the real information that you need is extremely helpful for developing the future therapies.
And do you see this technology replacing other types that we've been using and moving more towards this, is we're just able to get more information from this. I don't know if it's also faster, how that works.
I think, it largely builds on top of sequencing as I described it. So I think in terms of that, it's not a replacement. I think to a large extent, I think we see it as really growing what people can do, and not necessarily just being a kind of straight up replacement for any specific existing technologies, because a lot of it is really about offering new capabilities. I think there are certain kind of technologies that have aimed to do some of this. So one is like flow cytometry, where you're basically, it's been widely used for taking a population of cells and sorting those out into the individual components. And I think we would see some cases where these technologies like single cell works extremely well with flow cytometry, and actually you would highly utilize both together. But there are certain cases where now it provides just a much richer set of information, or a much quicker path to answer questions than you had with these existing technologies.
And when you're using this, what types of cells are you actually performing this on? You'd mentioned kind of blood cells before. Is that often what you're using, or are you taking a lot of different types of samples and working with that?
Yeah, so our customers basically use this on almost any kind of biological material that you can imagine. So blood is a big thing. Tumors and healthy tissue of almost every solid organ you can think of. We've had people do all sorts of non-human species and plants. So pretty much any kind of cell from any kind of biological system, we've had customers actually use our technology for.
And in the future, where do you see this also being used, of expanding from that cancer area, the immunology area? Where do you see this being able to be utilized, and hoping that scientists will really be taking up this new technology?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about a number of different areas. I think one is really in kind of drug discovery. So, we're already seeing this now, but I think it's really just the earliest part of this. And that is basically when you use single cell technologies, you can basically use them to use each individual cell to test a certain condition. So for instance, there's a method where that's called PerturbSeq, where basically you take a large collection of cells, and in each individual cell, you knock out, say, one gene with a CRISPR approach, and then you can actually read out in that individual cell what happened at a molecular level when you took that gene out. And that kind of question, when you say, okay, if I take gene one and I turn it off in a certain kind of cell, what happens? That's a very useful question for trying to generate leads for new therapies. And so what's really exciting about this is you can basically now, what you normally would have had to do very manually and in a very slow process, you can now basically screen, say, I'm going to take 1,000 different genes that I think are interesting, and in one experiment, knock out every single one of them and measure what happens if I do that. And I see that as just a very powerful technology that's going to be extremely useful across a wide range of drug discovery applications. So that's one area. The other area I think I'm very excited about, again, we're already seeing this happening, but I think we're likely to see a lot more, is it's in cancer, but it's really in this kind of immunotherapy approaches. And so I think we're at the very early days of people doing immunotherapy, which is really not trying to treat cancer with a small molecule, but trying to treat cancer with the immune system itself, either the patient's own immune system or kind of an artificial set of cells from outside of the patient. And both the single cell technologies and newer technologies that we're also have been working on are extremely useful for really understanding how therapies like that appear to be working, and when they're not working, how are they not working?
I think that's a great point on both sides, and so exciting to think about it from a research perspective, because when I think of a lot of genetic research, of mouse models are such a go-to for so many different labs, and making sure you're ordering the mouse model of what you need, and to be able to bypass that for certain experiments and say, oh, instead of having, say, 1,000 mouse models, you can just have this and be testing different cells, and those cells being engineered with CRISPR now of exactly what you need. I mean, I can't imagine how fast that can expedite the process and just how easy it would be to be testing different cells and being able to say, okay, so these genes that we were thinking about, we're going to put them on a lower priority list, and other ones, oh, okay, we see something happening here. So I think that's just so exciting in itself, and just, you know, looking at the future of research and what we can use with that. And I've heard a lot in terms of using, you know, the immune system to really be fighting cancer. And, you know, the human immune system is amazing. So if we can try and really capture that to help, it's a really exciting area. And I'm excited to see how this is all going to be used and the research studies that are going to come out of this, because this is such a baseline that is affecting so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really, there's really almost a very nice analogy of what's happening in biology today to what has been happening in the computer industry, you know, for the last several decades, where the technology is now just accelerating so quickly that, that, as you said, what, you know, maybe previously you were using a mouse model or some very kind of manual system to do a set of screening, and it would be prohibitive to do more than, say, you know, 100 cases and or 100 kind of trials, and, you know, that might take you years. And now you can see experiments that are just done, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of folds more efficiently. And what that allows people to do is just explore, you know, a much wider space, and also to do it much quicker. And I think that that, you know, is going to mean huge things, you know, 10 years from now, for all kinds of novel approaches to treating different diseases, diagnosing different diseases. And I think we're going to see tremendous progress, you know, based on a lot of these technologies for human health.
That also makes me wonder more about the data side of all of this. I mean, the data that you would be producing from this is a lot, it sounds like. How does this work for scientists to be able to manage all of this data? Do you see that bioinformatics is really becoming such a partner in this, and having people be experts in this, or scientists really kind of picking up that and becoming experts themselves?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, my background is largely in bioinformatics. And I think, you know, at 10X, one of the things that we really thought about deeply from the beginning of the company, from the founding of the company, was how do we really marry the expertise of, you know, algorithms and bioinformatics, also more kind of real traditional software development and some of the innovations that have happened there, with a lot of the traditional strengths of kind of biotech and biology in terms of building novel chemistries, enzymes, hardware, instruments. And so I think, you know, we believe, and I think a large fraction of the world is really believing now, that the software and the bioinformatics are going to be a massive part of the effort that's needed to take full advantage of these technologies and to fully unravel the complexity of biology. And I think what you're seeing in the field as a whole is really a number of things. You're seeing that both people who are kind of classically trained outside of you know, bioinformatics are learning more bioinformatics. They don't necessarily have to become the expert, but they are engaging in that and really trying to understand at least enough so they can communicate well with the bioinformatics people and you know, do some things themselves as well. But you're also seeing the bioinformaticians learning a lot more biology, and you're seeing kind of a lot closer linkages. And then one thing we're trying to do as a company, and we've been really focused on, is building, kind of democratizing software so that you can ask a lot of questions about our data and you can see a lot of visualizations about our data without necessarily being a bioinformatician yourself. So, you know, a biologist can go and run an experiment on our physical device, but then the data that comes off, we also provide software that both kind of analyzes that and performs various, you know, statistical calculations, as well as visualizes that data and the results and allows a researcher to explore it. And what that allows people to do is basically, even if you're not a bioinformatician, you can come to some basic set of conclusions. You can start probing the data. You can start exploring it on your own. You know, even as you may also have a bioinformatician on your team who, for your specific question, is now going deeper on the data and doing other kinds of more specific kinds of analyses.
That's fantastic. You're able to bridge that gap between sometimes scientists and the bioinformaticians and everything, because oftentimes it's great when people are able to work together and that's how a lab is set up. But oftentimes biologists are kind of on their own for some of it. So to be able to give them as many tools as possible so they can do what they can and then save those, you know, more in-depth questions for someone, an expert coming in. I can see that you're really in the trenches and understand all of this to be able to see where things are going, what people need right now. Anything else on the horizon for 10x Genomics as we're looking kind of into the future and what we see is coming into play in genetics?
Yeah, so I think one of the big areas for us now is you know, spatial genomics. And so that's kind of very closely related and very synergistic with single cell. So, you know, our initial set of products have all been around this single cell genomics, where you're really taking a sample and measuring each cell individually. And what that is amazing for doing is basically telling you, you know, all the differences that are present on a cell by cell basis. But one of the new areas we're also very excited about is this spatial genomics, where now you can actually say, where are those differences happening? So if you think about, again, that tumor example, you might not just be asking, in this case, the question, how do all the tumor cells differ from each other? But also, you know, in space, how are, which cells are next to which? How are they organized with respect to each other? And I think that technology has, you know, a very similar set of kind of areas of biology where it's going to have a huge impact, like, you know, cancer, the use of the immune system to treat cancer, the understanding of autoimmune diseases, all those things. This spatial genomics is going to be a kind of entire additive set of value for those kinds of questions.
Yeah, it sounds like an exciting area to be going into. And I'm sure as we get more into the year and everything of hearing more from this in the future with genetics, and it really ties together a lot of topics that we talked about on this episode of looking into all of this and the importance of seeing where genes are actually located and how they are having all of these interactions and what that's leading to. So thank you so much for diving into all these topics with me. I really appreciate it. Anything else you wanted to leave our audience with today?
No, I think that's it. And it's been great talking to you, and I really appreciate the time. Awesome. Thanks, Kira.
Learn more about 10x Genomics by heading over to their website, 10xgenomics.com. And on Twitter and Facebook, they are at 10x Genomics. You can stay updated with the show through our social media by searching DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. All of our episodes and more information can be found at dnapodcast.com. There's also a contact form on the website if you'd like to write into the show. If you have questions for Michael or me about this episode, you can use that contact form on the website, dnapodcast.com, or email in directly at info@dnapodcast.com. And you know what's coming next. I'm going to ask about rating and reviews on podcast apps, specifically Apple Podcasts. So if you haven't already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. We would really appreciate that. Before ending the show, I wanted to remind you about the sponsor of this DTC series, Picture Genetics, with their exclusive 25% discount for you as a DNA Today listener. Picture Genetics is different from a traditional direct consumer test because it's clinical grade testing with every case reviewed by a healthcare provider. Results are focused on health with medically actionable and useful information for you and your family. I actually did a couple of their kits, including their Picture Parenting one. Here's how it worked. I sent off my tube of spit to their lab, who sequenced a bunch of genes. This basically means they read through each gene to see if there was a mutation or pathogenic variants, as we genetic counselors call them. Then a physician or genetic counselor looked at my results and created a beautifully easy-to-read report, informing me about my carrier results. Here's my favorite part. There also is genetic counseling offered, so you can speak with a genetic counselor about your results, so there's no confusion. Order your own kit at picturegenetics.com and use code DNATODAY for 25% off and free shipping. Again, that's picturegenetics.com. Get actionable genetic insights today to benefit your family of tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
Genes of you and me, genes of you, and we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.